Hey, I'm Courtney Romano, and this is The Break Breakdown, a podcast by Queensbird Films. Today's episode is such a good one. I can't wait to tell you a little bit about it, but before we dive in, I want to give you just a quick update on where we are with Queensbird Films. So if you've been following along, if this is tracking, last year in August 2020, we launched this podcast. So we're almost about a year old, which is pretty awesome. I feel really good about that. And more so, I feel really grateful about it and all the people that I've been able to talk to and learn from. I really look at this podcast as kind of like my extended studies, my art school, my film school without going to film school. And everyone that I've talked to has given me and us such great insight on what it takes to break through. What does it take to break into an industry and to break down the industry that we're actually trying to break into? How do we create new forms, new structures, new ways of being that are more equitable, more holistic, more thoughtful and human and sustainable? And I don't think that's a question you can answer all on your own. If you can, be president of the world. But I think most people need a collaboration, a group of people to mine the answer out of that question. And it's an ever-evolving thing. It's a moving target. And so I am just want to say I'm so grateful to every single guest that I have had on this podcast, every single one of you who have listened to this podcast and either texted me or sent me a DM or posted a review on Apple Podcasts, subscribed on Apple or Spotify. All of these things continue that conversation. All of these things really uplift the questions. And I think that's where we need to be right now as a collective. And I'm just so grateful to be here. So the update from Queensbird Films is this. We have gotten over 4,000 submissions for casting our next digital series, Kinsley Versus, which is an 8-episode digital series. And I am floored by that. It is not, you can tell in my voice, like I don't even know what to say about it. I did not expect that much. And I honestly don't know where that falls in the range of like a lot to a little. I'm sure there are many, many things in the world that get many, many more submissions than that. But for our team, our production team, and this is just a really incredible feeling to be able to connect with as many people as possible and see where it goes. So I just wanted to throw out there that over the next couple of weeks, as we're heading into production of Kinsley Versus and we're really narrowing down into pre-production, I'm giving myself the space and I'm giving you the space that we might be every other week in our episodes. I'm not sure yet. I might have the bandwidth, I might not. And so I just want to put out there that there are a lot of moving pieces going on with that. And if you want to stay connected, which I hope you do, sign up for our email list, which is in the show notes. The Queensbird list is just a newsletter that goes out every so often when there are announcements. And we will be having those coming up late summer, early fall, when we have more announcements that kind of go along with what we're producing and all of that. On today's episode, I talked with Rashad Chambers, who is, among other things, a Tony Award-nominated Broadway producer. And this title, right, of Broadway producer is so, how you get there is so, has felt so unknowable to me. I remember being in a showcase. Maybe it wasn't a showcase, but it was some kind of a master class my senior year of college. And someone was trying to describe to, you know, a group of 21, 22-year-old students what a producer does. And I remember she said, the producer is the one that, like, pulls it all together. And I didn't quite understand because I was like, wait, I thought that was the director and the choreographer and the musical director or, you know, just the director and the playwright. Like, I didn't really understand what a producer did. Fast forward to now, when I've produced my own work and helped other people develop their work and been on this track with Queensbird Films, and it's like, oh yes, the producer does everything. But even within that, even within a producer helps get a show on its feet, a producer can be creative, a producer can do financing, a producer can do all kinds of things, it still feels really elusive. How do you get into a Broadway circle to produce? How do you get into any circle to produce? Like, just where do you go? Where do you go to start? And Rashad's story actually proves that you can start anywhere. You can start anywhere. You, in fact, can only start where you are. And this is what's brilliant about what he talks about in this episode, is he talks about all these huge leaps that he made. I don't think he ever describes it as huge leaps. I'm describing it as huge leaps that he made just by taking the next right step and the kind of mindset that he had around each time he took that step. And I don't think that you can divorce the mindset from the move, meaning I think the move is partially dependent on the mindset that allows the move to happen. I hope that's not too esoteric, but I think it's a really important thing that he brings up, which is he brings this mental clarity, this focus, this, and also this humility and dedication. And within all of that, there is a great amount of gratitude and joy and fun that he's having. And I don't think you can discount that, because I know from my own experience that when I was auditioning and I spent 10 years as an actor in New York City, many moments were joyful, many moments I was filled with gratitude, but my baseline was not there. My baseline was like, you know, angsty 26-year-old wanting to, you know, prove everybody wrong or something like that. I don't know. It just wasn't helpful. And that's fine. Like, that was my road and my journey, and I'm so grateful for where that journey has led me today. But what he's talking about is bringing this underlying sense of absolute love of what you're doing, love of craft, love of every step, not only just looking towards the future, but being present in where you are now and making the best or most out of it right now without needing to go too far ahead or stay too far behind. And I just think it's a message that, whether you're into producing or not, is a fantastic message for all of us to keep in our hearts and minds. And if you are interested in producing, he gives such an amazing, detailed, and fascinating look into how he built his career. And, you know, I won't give too much away, because he tells the story so well, obviously, in the interview itself. But I'll just tell you, he didn't go to school to be a producer. So anyway, this is a great episode. Rashad was so wonderful, and I know you're going to get just as much out of it as I did. So I'm going to stop talking and introduce you to Rashad V. Chambers. Rashad, I'm so excited to welcome you to The Break Breakdown. I'm so excited to talk to you, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We were talking a little bit before we started recording just about how it can be really tricky for people to find their way into this business. And you do something of a magic trick, I think, which is you are a talent manager, you are a producer, and you also have founded this thing called the Industry Standard Group. So you are kind of coming at the industry from all angles and all avenues in all ways. And I'm always fascinated by how people start out. So I guess I'm wondering, if we take it all the way back, what did you tell people when you were a kid? What did you tell people you wanted to do when you grew up?
When I was a kid, I said I wanted to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
And then you
was about 13 years old.
So you knew that you became a lawyer.
I did, yes.
Yeah. What do you think it was that drew you to law?
Besides being a nerd, you know, it's funny. People ask me that all the time, and I don't really know. I remember when I was younger, I used to watch Matlock and Perry Mason with my mm-hmm. mom. And I think mm-hmm. that just really piqued my interest in the law. There weren't any other lawyers in my family. So I really didn't have a sort of benchmark to look at, but I really just love the idea of the intellectual rigor of it all. And then when I got into high school, I was able to be on the mock trial team. And that sort of really gave me a little bit more insight in being able to work with lawyers and to be able to do these sort of practice trials. And that really made me excited about just the world and kind of distinguish what I wanted to do versus what I sort of knew about. And so that really set the wheels in motion for me to start this career goal.
That's really fascinating to me that your world opened up into law through entertainment, because I feel like a lot of times people on paths outside of art and entertainment have someone in their family as like, oh, my dad did this, or my mom did this, or my older sibling did this, and that's how I was introduced to it. But do you think there's any reason why you were drawn to it first in the arts? Like, or is it, that's just how you were exposed to it?
That's just how I was exposed to it. And I've always been a big dreamer.
Yeah.
And have had a vivid imagination. So when I was younger, I just always thought about sort of the impossible and just figured out my own path. And I was very fortunate to have a very loving and supportive family, as well as a lot of great mentors that really just saw something in me and really encouraged me to always dream and to shine. And I never knew why. You know, I think a lot of my youth, I had imposter syndrome because I just never knew what people saw. And I always thought, well, there are people who are smarter or more talented. Why are you singling me out? But they always did. And so I didn't second guess it. I just went with it and just thought, well, they see something, so let me just keep going. And that's really how it all started. And then I really just set the wheels in motion to just do everything to achieve that goal. From high school to college until I actually got into law school was all about being a lawyer, which is good and bad. It can be unhealthy in some ways because you're so rigid about academic excellence, but I knew it's something that I had to do, and I worked very hard to do it.
It's so interesting that you're saying you had this imposter syndrome, because I feel like that's like a keyword, right? Like that's like in our Google search, everyone is just like, am I an imposter? I feel like an imposter. It's just like so of the moment. But what's cool about what you're talking about is you had that as a kid being like, me? And then you were like, well, let me just try that on for size. Like maybe I am that person. I've been thinking a lot lately about, I've been listening to some people who talk about quantum leaping, and they talk about instead of being like, oh, one day I want to be X, you know, this kind of person, they say, make your decisions today about how, like in the way that person, oh, you want to be a CEO, oh, you want to be a Broadway star, whatever it is, make those decisions like that, like you would assume that person would make them today. Right. And then you're being them. Is that kind of?
That's what I did. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I will back up, because I understand that many people watching this or listening to this may come from various backgrounds and may not have had, you know, the foundation that I had, you know what I mean? So it may not be as easy. And so I don't want to just say like, snap your fingers and it's all possible. But again, because my family was so loving and supporting, I never really felt like I couldn't do anything. And no one ever told me that I couldn't do anything. So even though I had a little bit of that imposter syndrome, I still was very confident. So I just kind of jumped into many situations because I wasn't afraid of rejection or failing. And so for me, it was about just trying and really just going for it. And I didn't have those quote unquote gremlins that said, oh, you're not good enough or you can't do it. So I just sort of stuck a toe in and just, okay, I didn't die. Okay, let me put a foot in. Okay, let me put a leg in.
Yeah.
And really, really kept going. And it really helped just to have that encouragement and that reinforcement to say, like, how's everything going? Oh, it's going to be great. You know, you're going to be amazing and all of those things. And so I was able to just navigate the unknown by just doing.
Yeah. And you can't really know what anything is until you do it, right? It's like you can, this is how my like personal anxiety works, is I try to use my anxiety to control everything in the future. Mm-hmm. And I spin myself around. But then as soon as I get to the point where I have to act in the future doing whatever it was I was anxious about, I'm fine. Right. Like I'm totally fine. And it's kind of the same with like just making a leap in your life. You know, you can't know until you do it.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I'm just learning about anxiety and how people deal with it. I've never suffered from it. So that's mm-hmm. another reason why I've always been able to jump in, because I don't have to anticipate the future.
Yes.
Of course, but I don't need to like think of every scenario and the worst case and the best case. I just do it. And I tell a lot of my clients, as well as students I talk to, in my world, you can't fail if you've tried. Mm-hmm. The failure is not doing, or the failure is letting somebody else tell you you can't do it. As long as you try, you've gained something, because you've learned something and you've grown.
Yes.
So that's sort of how I navigate the world.
Yes, yes. That's so clear in your journey and your work from my, you know, limited perspective, just like learning about you on the outside, but just that everything is a gain. I mean, I can look, I'm sure people listening like can look back in their lives and see quote unquote failures and know like, well, yeah, I didn't get whatever that shiny medal was, but I got this whole other array of skills or connections or what have you. And you can't do it unless you're in the arena.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I get rejected from things every single day. Mm. But it still inspires me to keep going, because I feel like I'm one step closer to a goal or to a dream, or I made a new relationship out of that rejection. So for me, it's always a win. It doesn't mean it's not disappointing, but it doesn't discourage me or cripple me from moving forward.
You know, yeah, that's so key. And I actually, it's reminding me when I first started out. So I'm a writer director now, but I started out as an actor and a dancer and a singer and all that. And when I came to New York, I had a spreadsheet and it was all my auditions and everything, like, and everyone I went in for and like what I was singing, what I was doing. And I would literally check them off and I'd be like, all right, I just have to get through whatever the number was, 25 no's until I get a yes. Right. So I would be like, all right, like, so if I want to work 4 times this year, I need to go to 100 auditions.
Right.
And like what you're saying, each rejection is a step forward. It's like a winnowing or like a whittling away of like what's not for you.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And I also, you know, this may be slightly off topic, but in that journey, you have to remember to enjoy that.
Yes.
Not just think about, oh, I booked a Broadway show and then I'll be happy. You have to be happy auditioning. You have to be happy doing the regional work or the readings and stuff like that, because it's hard. And I always try to celebrate the small victories. So even if I did those 20 auditions and didn't get any of them, I think, okay, well, did I know that casting director before? Mm-hmm. No, now they know me. Or I got a callback, or a new director or a new music director, you know, got to see me. And that's, you know, from the actor's perspective or from the producing, like, oh, I wasn't invited to be a part of that show, but now that producer knows me, so maybe they'll think about me for the next show. Or, you know, if you're a business person, oh, maybe I didn't get that job at Goldman Sachs, but you know what, I made it to the final round. You never know where that recruiter is gonna go. Maybe they're gonna go to Chase next, or, you know, so just really thinking about relationships, because so much of not just entertainment, but the world is about who you know and about relationships. And so you really, I think, learn and grow from every experience.
Yes, that's so key. It is all about relationships and connections. Like there's nothing else. Like everything else is a symptom of the relationship, right? Or the connection or whatever that is. Okay, so just going back a little bit, you went to law school, you made that happen. At some point you decided, I'm going to New York City. So tell me about that moment.
Yes, absolutely. So last year of school, because I did a JD MBA program, which was 4 years, I worked for a small law firm in Ohio, which is where I was going to school. And I had a really great experience with them. And they sat me down and said, listen, we really love you, but we need to hire an attorney right now. and you're not going to be done with school for another 2 months, and then you have to study for the bar, and then you have to wait for your results, and we can't wait that long. And so we have to hire this person now, and we don't know if we're going to have the bandwidth to hire another person for the fall. Right. So we just want to kind of give you the heads up, because we don't want you to wait around or miss other opportunities, which I really respected. Yeah. And so once I thought about that, I said, you know what, I would have taken that job if I'd gotten it, but I was like, I really don't want to stay in Ohio. I want to leave. There's no other firm that I really want to work for. And I'm just going to take a leap of faith, and I'm going to move, and I'm going to try to pursue my dream. And my goal was really just to be lawyer by day, producer by night, so I can really learn about the business and get acclimated. And a good friend that I studied abroad with in Spain in college lived in Connecticut, near New Haven. So not in New York, but close enough that I can come and network. Right. And again, relationships, right? Nice. Because we had stayed in touch throughout that entire time. I visited, and she had a house. And so mm-hmm. she was like, come live with me. Like, I don't like living alone. I rent my second bedroom out sometimes anyway. Like, we can work out something, you can rent it. So that was how it all started. I made that decision probably my last semester of law school to move. And and that really is what set the wheels in motion.
That, and again, like taking a quote unquote rejection or like a missed opportunity and making it into, well, what do I want to do now? You know, yes. I can't go to that law firm. What do I want to do? Okay. So you get to New York, Connecticut area, and you are going to be lawyer by day, producer by night, which, by the way, just sidebar, do you know the musician Saint Lennox?
I don't.
Okay. So it's this beautiful man who makes beautiful music. His name is Andrew Choi, and he's a lawyer by day, musician by night. And he's this like beautiful indie pop musician. And there's something about like lawyering as a day job that just like makes me so happy. It's like so in my mind, it is such an intense profession. And then to on top of that be like, and while I do this really intense thing that has like legal ramifications, I'm also going to pursue whatever I just think it's like the most wonderful thing. So that's just a sidebar, but
I'll have to look him up. You know, he's probably like me. You know how they say some people are left brained or right brain.
Yeah.
I always tell people I'm whole brained.
Yes.
It's like nerdy intellectual side, but I also have this really creative side that I feel like I have to do both in aspects of my life.
Yes. I love that. I want to be that. And I don't think I'll ever be that, but I'll send you his music afterwards. He just released a new album. Anyway, that's another podcast for another time. Okay. So you get to New York and you're being a lawyer and you say, let me pursue this big dream that I have of being a producer.
Right.
I'm
still in Connecticut at this point.
Okay. You're still in Connecticut.
Yes. So I take the New York and Connecticut bar exam. And while I'm waiting for results, I say, okay, I have to get a job because I don't have a job. And I just start scouring every site you could think of. And I come across this small production company that makes documentaries about theater. And they have, I forget what the position was, like a producer position or something within the company. I applied. The president of the company called me and said, you don't quite have the skill set that we're looking for, but we do have some unpaid internships if you want to come and get some experience and work. So I thought, well, I'm not doing anything else. I'm just applying for jobs. Why not do that? And so I went and started in September. And then 2 months later, the person who was the rights and clearances director who I worked under quit. And the president called me that same day and offered me the job. And so that was how I moved from Connecticut to New York, because then I had a job.
You had a job. And again, like just underlining how it's like you are just availing yourself to how the puzzle is going to work itself out. And
absolutely, because, you know, I could have had a lot of ego. Like, I just graduated from law school. I'm not working for free. And you know what? There was just something about it that just seemed very intriguing and very interesting. And I just decided to do it, you know, and just and be able to network. And fortunately, it paid off for me.
Do you feel like you follow, or would you call it your intuition? Do you follow your intuition a lot, or like your gut when it comes to big decisions like that?
I guess sometimes, like, I don't know. I don't feel like I have a strong intuition, but every now and again, I'll just feel pulled in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And again, because I don't have that fear of rejection, I just sort of jump in if it feels right to me.
Right.
You know, if it feels right and if it feels like I'm going to gain something, then I'm all about trying it.
Right. And you don't have that other part of you that's like, sometimes I understand my intuition by like what's arguing with my intuition. I'll be like, oh, I really want to do that thing. And there's all this like static over here being like, wait, you could fail, you know, but it sounds like you don't have that. So you're just kind of like, yeah, if it feels good, I'm going to go right. for it.
I don't have that at all. There are moments every now and again when I'm like, did you bite off more than you could chew? But I don't have the, you know, don't do that. You're not going to be good enough. I don't have that.
That's, to me, that's like, you are a superhero. I'm like, who, that's amazing. And I'm not saying that in a sense of like you clearly work hard for everything. Like you clearly put blood, sweat, and tears into everything that you're doing. but I feel like you also have this clarity of mind that for me is like a beacon on the hill. I'm like, let me get to that clarity state of mind. And I think just listening to how you have made all your decisions is such a helpful kind of blueprint for people who also feel like me of like, wait, I want to get clear about this stuff. So you land in Rights and Clearances, you move to New York. Was that job something that you were like, I really want to work in this particular part of producing? Or was it like, this is a step towards my bigger dream, my bigger vision?
It was more of a stepping stone. I mean, my ultimate dream was to be a Broadway producer.
Yeah.
But obviously I needed a check and a path to get there. Yeah. So I would just say it was something that was sort of a means to an end. It wasn't a dream job, but it was something that was very interesting. And it did help me get another job.
Okay. So then how did you step into the role of producer for the first time?
Okay. Yeah, that's a fun story. So about a year or so after I got the job as the Rights and Clearances director, I had this little inner talk with myself saying, okay, you've been in New York a year now. You moved here to be a producer. You're not producing anything. And let's figure out what that path is to get into producing. And a friend of mine who is an actress came over to my place because her Wi-Fi was down. And she was looking at the Actors Equity website and she pulled up this post that somebody was doing Michael John Lacusa's The Wild Party at Columbia for his thesis.
Okay, yeah.
And so I was like, that sounds interesting. I really love that music. Maybe that's something that I can work on. So I just wrote the director blindly and said, you know, I'm a lawyer. I want to be a producer. I really love the show. I'd love to talk to you about working on it. And he wrote me back and was like, okay, let's talk. Like, you know, this is a showcase, you know, there's no money, right? I was like, no, absolutely. I know that. I just really want the experience. And he was like, okay, let's meet. Like, I could just tell he was like very skeptical.
Yeah.
So we met and just hit it off. We talked a lot about art and our passions. And he was like, I really love your perspective. And I love to have you work on the show. Let me just check with the department because I don't know if they've ever had an outside producer work on it. And so he checked with them, called me back a day or two later and said, it's a go, like come and work on it. And so that's how I ended up producing my first show. And when I met with him, he said, the department's giving me $3,000. I think we could do it for $5,000. I'm going to raise another $2,000. And then once we got in the thick of it, we realized that it was going to be about $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to raise some money, as well as helping with the creative aspects of the show, which is really amazing. And
yeah,
that was the first time, you know, I took an idea in my mind. I didn't know if I would actually be good at it, but I thought I wanted it. But once I had that experience with The Wild Party, I thought, oh, this is something that I can I can really do and I think I can excel at. And so from there, I finished that project. The director and I really hit it off and became quite good friends. Mm-hmm. And he put a book in my hand and said, I read this book in high school. I want to make it into a musical. I want you to work on it with me. And so we started working on that. And then now we've worked on about 4 projects together.
Incredible. And also incredible. Like, I think there's something, again, like just underlining these things, to be said for saying like, I don't know how to do this. Let me go find out. And, 'cause you never know until, like, I mean, it's like, it's a cliche because it's true, right? You never know until you actually try it. So you get into that position. And for people who don't necessarily understand what a producer does, can you explain that just briefly, just to kind of give the background?
Absolutely. I like to put it in sort of 2 buckets. There are creative producers and there are business producers. On the creative side, you know, you're really integrally involved with production. You're working with the writers on the script or the music. You are, you know, being in design meetings, figuring out like how you're going to make a vision come to life with the director and with the designers. There's overseeing marketing and advertising and press and all those things. And then there's sort of a business side, which is the majority of work that I've done on Broadway as a co-producer, where your main job is to raise money. Mm-hmm. The lead producer will give you sort of a slot saying you have to raise $250,000 or $200,000, and then you have to go and raise that money. And then once you raise that money, you're really done, even though you're invited to marketing meetings or co-producer meetings. So I like to look at as a producer, a lead producer, as sort of a CEO of a company. They're really in charge of everything, you know, really creating something from page to stage and hiring everyone and really making sure that the day-to-day business of the show runs smoothly.
Right. Oh, that's such a great description of all of that. And it sounds like what it is truly like taking what's in here in the head, in the brain, in the heart, and like bringing it to the outer world and making it happen. And in our society that we live in, that takes money and that takes creative design meetings and all of that. So when you were working on The Wild Party, you did kind of both, right? Like you did all.
I did. Yes. Because we needed $5,000 extra dollars, then I had to jump in and sort of raise money. And I it wasn't really an investment because it was basically a school production. But most of my friends from business school and law school were working and had a lot more money than I did. And they also knew of my dreams. So like a typical nerd, I just wrote them all letters and put them in the mail, not even an email. Like I wrote them letters and said, you know, this is my dream I've shared with you. And I really love it if you would help support me in pursuing this dream. Yeah. If you can make a donation, it would be tax deductible.
Right.
And it would really help out the show. And I think all of them said yes.
I mean, that is a key point that you're making too, because as I'm at the start of my fundraising process for this series that I'm developing, and it's all, again, going back to relationships, right? People may not love The Wild Party the way that you love the music. They may not know the director the way you know the director, but they know you. And so when you go to people, they are, whether it's, you know, an investment or a donation, whatever, that aside, they're investing in you, in your future, in your dream. And I think a lot of artists forget that because we think everyone loves everything that we love. Like, of course you would love Andrew Lipa. Like, of course you would, you know, be pulled to this the way that I would. But again, it's about the connections you have and the people that you have supported along the way and who support you and who are investing in your future and your dream.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's incredible. Okay, so you're out there, you're producing, you're doing your thing. There's an inflection point when you become a Broadway producer. Can you tell me about what was that inflection point for you?
Yes. So I will first note that it was 11 years from my first show to my first Broadway show. Mm-hmm. So I spent over 10 years just developing new work, trying to learn everything that I could about producing and networking and raising money and all of those things, and really just building relationships. And basically, my first Broadway show came to me again through relationships. One of my acting clients is an actor and producer, and he had produced a handful of Broadway shows at that point and just asked me if I wanted to be involved. And I first said no, because I was working on another project and I was already raising money for that. And so I just didn't feel like I could really give 100% to both. And the one that I was raising money for, I was a lead producer. And so I really was a bit overwhelmed. And so I said no, unfortunately, even though I really liked the project. And then I went off to do my other show. And 3 days after I got back from doing that show, I ran into this friend again, friend slash client again. And he said, you know, I still have this slot open for you if you want it. And so I thought, wow, I guess I should actually try. Yes. Since it's come back to me. And I just put out a few feelers with some friends who were investors. And people just started saying yes and yes and yes. And so it's probably the easiest raise that I've done out of the five shows that I've produced. But yeah, that's sort of how it happened.
That's so interesting. So it's almost like, yeah, like there, my mind's going like seven different ways right now. I'm trying to focus on one. So first of all, I love that it came back to you and you were like, I'm clocking this. I'm noting that it's coming back. I'm noting that this opportunity is not lost. So let me take another look at it. At the time when you had finished that other project, right? You had finished your work for that other project. So your mind was open and clear. And that also then the fundraising for that was, I would never call anything easy, but like it flowed. Mm-hmm. Like there was a natural flow to it that right. you could dive into.
Yes. Easier, I should say. It wasn't yes. It's not easy, but I raised money for three shows in that year, and the first two were really challenging. Yes. So compared to those, that third project, which was my first Broadway show, was relatively easy. And it was American Son with Kerry Washington. So that made it easier. Yes. Because it was a play with a star who was just coming off a hit TV show for 7 years.
Yes.
So that certainly helped.
Yes, that helps it. Wow. So now you're a Broadway producer. And I think I listened to another interview, or I might've read it, where, and you just kind of mentioned it, that you, that year, were producing two shows on Broadway, three shows on Broadway.
Two shows that season.
Yeah.
The first show that I actually raised money for was Ain't Too Proud, mm-hmm. the musical about the Temptations, but that opened second. So American Son opened in November of 2018, and Ain't Too Proud opened in March of 2019. So yes, not technically the same year, but same season.
But same season. Also auspicious dates, that pre-2020, right? Like,
yes.
I'm like sweating thinking about it, like going back in time. So how did it feel?
Honestly, it felt so amazing. And I was happy that I had spent so much time just learning and growing, so that when it happened, I can take it all in, mm-hmm. and not take it for granted. And, yes. You know, it was really special. It was a show that I was proud of. It was a show that I thought really started a great conversation about what's going on in our country. Mm-hmm. And just the joy that not only I felt, but that so many people around me felt. I mean, I had people from all over the country come see the show. Even one of my friends from London came. People who knew me for, you know, 15 years at that point came to New York you know, and I don't take that for granted ever, you know, because a lot of my friends are married and have kids, and for them to leave their homes, get on a plane, you know, book hotels to say, no, we have to be there. This is your dream and you achieved it. It just, it blew my mind. And, and it was really more than anything I could ever imagine. And the conversations that happened after, the tears that happened after, you know, people sharing about how the show resonated with them. And it was an amazing first show. And I'm so happy that I chose that to be my first one.
Well, it sounds like it was just so impactful. And also, you know, if you have people flying across the country or the world to see you, that obviously says a lot about who you are as a friend and who you are in relationship. You know, that's a direct reflection. So again, like coming back to the same point, like these are people who are invested in you, you are invested in them. And I think a lot of times artists, whoever who's pursuing something big, they don't have to be artists, business people, whoever, teachers, you think like that goal is going to mean something to me. And really how much more powerful it, what I'm hearing from you, how much more powerful is to be like, what it means to us, you know, what it means to us in conversation about the content, what it means to us in terms of like, you know, it takes a village for anyone to do anything. Like,
yes, I was just about to say that it really, really does. And it was an important lesson to me to share your art because people are rooting for you that you don't even know. And not in a narcissistic way or whatever, like don't go to a party and spill out your bio or talk about your credits. But like, I'm talking about real relationships that you have, you know, share with people that care about you, what you're doing, because they really want to know and they may want to support you. Even if that person can't, you know, invest in you, they may know somebody else that can, that wants to invest in your show or wants to help you do your demo or help you with your short film. You know, there are so many people who have the means to do it and want to do it. And I think it can come in a very natural and organic way. So don't feel like you have to do it alone. I think that that's one of the hardest parts about being an artist and being in entertainment is that when you're early in your journey, you feel alone. Mm-hmm. And not in a sense of like lonely, but in a way that, you know, you often don't feel like somebody is there to help you.
Right.
You just want that stepping stone, or you just want somebody to open up that door so you can just show what you can do. You don't want a handout, but you just like, can I just get a chance? Can I just get that audition, or can I get that interview or that meeting? And so I think it just comes along with the journey of sharing, meeting people, getting out of your comfort zone, and being very intentional about what you want to do and how you can go about doing it.
That is so beautiful. I have chills. I always get chills, but I really do have chills right now. Because what you're saying to me brings me back to something you said earlier, which was about, you know, just trying. And sometimes I think it's really hard for people who have a dream, whatever that dream is, to even commit to saying it. And even committing to saying it out loud, if you're at a party with a friend, like to your point, not going out like, who's going to support me here, but having a true relationship, a true conversation with someone, someone says, what are you up to? Giving them the honest answer can sometimes feel just as scary as like sending out a fundraising letter, right? Or like whatever a heavy lift is. And I think what you're bringing up is such a great practical, not strategic, but like authentically strategic tool. Like no one is going to offer that open door if they don't know you want to walk through it. So just tell the truth. Yes. I want this. Yes. I don't know how I'm going to get it.
Be honest, be authentic, and just share. You know, that is the beauty of what we do. And a lot of people who are not in the business, this I keep prefacing because this really goes for any industry you're in, but specifically with entertainment, I find that my friends who are not in it are fascinated by it and they want to learn about it. Right. But this can also go if you're a scientist or if you're a nurse, like just share with people because you never know how somebody can be a blessing to you or vice versa.
Right. That's so good. So you might have already answered this. So forgive me if I'm being like beating it over the head, but if you were going to give a piece of advice to someone who's just starting out as a producer, what is the, you know, money aside, because everyone has different levels of access to capital, right? But money aside, what could someone invest their time into? What would be the one best thing to invest their time into?
Okay, so for me, it would be to learn your craft and really understand how this business works and how to put a show together. There are a lot of people in our industry as co-producers or lead producers who are doing it as a second act. And many of them have a lot of great skills, but I don't feel like a lot of them really know theater. Right. And in my opinion, it's why Broadway in particular has changed so much and why it seems to be commercial in a way that many people don't like. Mm-hmm. I think there's room for everyone, but you know, we tend to lean towards movie musicals, jukebox musicals, because it has built-in marketing and built-in branding. But we still need to have new shows. Yeah. And I think that comes along with people who are wonderful creative producers who understand the ins and outs of theater, who know what a 10 out of 12 is, who know, you know, what upstage and downstage is, who knows, like, who came before them. You know, if I'm doing a musical about, you know, Africa, or someplace in Africa, well, what shows have come before that have been on Broadway? You know, do you know about Fela? Do you know about Serafina? Like, those things are very important to know the players, know who are the lead producers right now, what kind of shows are they doing? What's their aesthetic? You know, when I started in college, I would read playbill.com every day, and I still do, because it really gives me insight into the industry. I get to read press releases and understand what albums are coming out, what shows are coming out, what initiatives are coming out, you know what I mean? If there are programs that are nurturing aspiring directors or producers or writers, like, I want to know about those so I can be in those rooms, because it's not just about knowing other producers, but it's like, who's creating the content? Like, right. Is there a great writer who has a show that's in workshop right now, or they have a great musical that's at, you know, second stage that I should check out? So I just think the more that you can, you know, learn about the industry, the better producer you'll be.
Yeah. And to that point, making the individual better and making the industry better, you have co-founded something called the Industry Standard Group. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, the Industry Standard Group is a BIPOC investing and producing fund that allows more people of color to get into the commercial theater industry, whether it be Broadway or off-Broadway, through producing and investing. So the fund is going to take members that you can join, and then the money that you use as a membership will be compiled to then invest in other shows. And the point is, you know, to really diversify commercial theater. Over 90% of Broadway producers and investors are white. And some of that is barriers to entry. Some of that is the financial cost of it. So we want to allow people to invest at a much smaller threshold and be able to diversify that investment, not only just in one show, but in multiple shows. And I've been very blessed to work with 7 other co-founders on this initiative. It's new, there hasn't been anything done like it. So we're still working out some of the kinks to figure out how to do everything the way that we want to do it. But we hope to launch and be able to start raising money in the fall and start investing in shows shortly after that.
This kind of stuff makes me, like, my hair stand up so excited, because to me, that's a vision of a new future for us. That's a vision of a way forward where we have like, you know, better Broadway. We have better theater. We have stories and access, and we just have a better space to be creating art. And to me, when I read about it, I was like, this is the model. And then once there's a more inclusive, like diverse, equitable place, like this is to me the model of how everyday people can get involved, and theater and art and entertainment can be a communal process where we're investing in each other. And we can have those moments like you had after American Son with people who were invested in you. We can have that, you know, in so many more places and so many opportunities for people to come together. I just think it's beautiful.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy to work on it the past year. And, you know, I'm hoping that it will be something that can just really change the landscape, and that we can not only have more people investing and producing, but we can tell more diverse stories.
Yes, absolutely. Amen to that. Okay, I'm watching the time. I always go over, so I'm going to like try to get like tighten this up. So I want to ask you, what is something that you misunderstood about this industry when you started out that you understand better now?
That's a good question. I don't know about if it was something that I misunderstood, but the term or phrase, all that glitters is not gold, comes to mind. I think a lot of times you put so much pressure onto getting there or making things bigger in our mind than they actually are. And I think that, you know, being in the industry or being a producer, I just thought it was this impossible mountain to climb, because I don't come from money. I don't know a lot of people who are rich. But once I, you know, got the opportunity to be a co-producer, I worked hard, but I realized, because I've spent 10 years doing this, I now have relationships and I have people that I can call to invest money, or people that I know are rooting for me and they're calling people who they know to invest in me. And so that's something that just really comes to mind. And I try to tell other aspiring producers to just say, again, share your art with people, because it's something that is possible, but you have to be diligent and you have to put in the work. You don't have to be a millionaire to be a producer. You don't have to put your own money in a show to be a producer, but you do need to raise it, and you do need to have connections to capital in order to achieve that goal.
Right. And you can't, to your point, you can't be a producer without putting yourself out there. No one's going to walk up to you with $10,000.
Right.
It'd be lovely, but it's not going to happen unless you put yourself out there. Okay. So my very last question is one that I really like to ask guests, because everyone has a slightly different answer, and it just is so beautiful to me to hear the array of how people answer this question, which is, for you, what does success feel like?
For me, it's about waking up every day and being able to do what you love, and having autonomy to do it. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that I get to meet different people every day. I get to learn different things every day. I get to challenge myself every day, and I get to do it sort of on my own schedule. Like, I don't have to sit at a desk from 9 to 6 every day and, you know, take a half an hour lunch and, you know, do all these things. Like, if I want to go work out at 11 a.m., I can. If I want to start have a meeting at 4 p.m., I can, you know. So for me, that autonomy and that ability to do what I love is really what I classify as success. Of course, there are financial goals that I have that also are a part of my life, but it's not about money to me, or else I would have just stayed a lawyer. But it's really about, you know, waking up every day and feeling good about what you do. Mm-hmm. And there are so many people who don't have that luxury, unfortunately. And so I really hope that when I talk about what I do and what I want to do, that people experience the passion and joy that I have about my art and about my profession, because it's something that I've been working at for 15 years, something that I truly love. And when I wake up, I never have any dread about doing what I need to do that day. You know what I mean? So for me, that's success. The success is finding the joy and just being able to do what you love.
Yeah, I love that. That's so beautiful. And I think just from, you know, we're meeting for the first time, I can feel that passion from you. I can feel that like deep, authentic joy from you in what you're doing and all the steps along your path as well. I can see how, you know, going back 5 years, 10 years, you were probably, I could feel that deep connection of joy that you still have to the work all along the path, all along the way. And yeah, this has been so great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. I try, you know, it definitely takes work and doesn't mean that it's not hard.
Yeah.
But it's always worth it.
Always worth it. I love that. So if people want to find your work and what you're doing and what you're working on, where can they find you?
I'm horrible at social media, but my website for my company is esquireentertainment.com. I try to update that regularly. And also I'm on Instagram. Rashad D. Chambers is my handle. And yeah, those are probably the best two ways to stay informed.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rashad.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, Courtney.
And that's Rashad. I hope you loved this episode as much as I did. And if you did, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this online. You can tag us in social at Queensbird Films and shoot us a DM over there. Let us know what you thought. And once again, thank you so much for being here. It is so amazing. We love what we're building together. Let's keep doing it. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.